In the last two chapters, we've been looking at forces and trying to think about forces and what forces are acting on different bodies and looking at the resulting motion. Okay, and I have a couple examples. I couldn't do every one of my favorite examples in the time that we have. But just to give you some ideas of things that we're able to do. So first example, inclined planes. We've seen plenty with inclined planes and examples, homework, on the test, whatever. Okay, here's an example where you have two masses as a review. The idea here is to look at each mass individually, draw free body diagrams, and think about what forces are acting on it, whether this is an equilibrium situation or a non-equilibrium situation. So we have two masses sitting here. This mass that's hanging off to the side, there's a pulley here. Usually you're given a massless pulley because if the pulley had some mass, there are some other things one has to take into consideration. Okay, let's see. For the hanging mass, what forces would be acting on this? Weight?
Tension.
And there'd be tension. Right, so it's tension pulling up, weight pulling down. There are only vertical forces, and those vertical forces, okay, would have to cancel if this were in equilibrium. If it were not in equilibrium, we'd have to take note of the acceleration. These two blocks are moving. It's possible this one's heavy enough for this to accelerate downward, or this one's heavier and it'll accelerate the opposite direction. So we have to indicate some acceleration. Any downward acceleration is negative, upward would be positive. Likewise, we can write down the forces on the other body. There is a force going in that direction. What force is that?
Normal force.
Normal. There's the weight, there's the tension, parallel to the surface, assuming, of course, that that line is set up so that it's parallel. So this body, you can add up all the forces, set it equal to ma. This body, add up all the forces, set it equal to its mass times its acceleration. And typically you are given enough information so that you can solve for the unknowns. In the first, on the first mass, there's only one direction. We get one equation. For this mass, you're going to get two. That's three equations, so there's a possibility of three unknowns. But the problem is doable. You sit down, you draw the free body diagrams, and you use Newton's second law. Chapter 4, there's a problem, which is actually number 57. There's a picture that's on the wall, and what you have to do is exert some pressure against the picture so that that picture does not slip. Okay, so there's some friction on the wall. Right, of course you take your finger off, you know, false. All right, so you want to exert some pressure. Problem here is the board book actually did say pressure. You don't know what pressure is. We'll find out what pressure is in a couple of chapters. What they really should talk about is the force, because pressure and force are not the same, as we'll find out. Okay, so what forces would be acting in this picture? On the picture, or whatever you're putting against the wall. It could be a meter stick, right? Here's a meter stick. Question is, what's the minimum pressure? If I release this, it begins to slip, right? So I have to exert some force on there, just enough so it doesn't slide. So what forces are acting on there was the question on this picture. There's a hand pushing against it. There's a force of the wall pushing back. In this case, this is a vertical surface, right? But nonetheless, we can count the surface now. Any other forces?
Weight.
There's got to be one more force, otherwise it's going to go down, right? The net force here cannot possibly be zero with the forces I've put in there. So there has to be another force. So there's a frictional force. So we have the frictional force, the weight. We have a normal force, we have the finger force. All right, so those are the forces involved. You set that up. Look at the sum of the x components of the forces. Set it equal to zero because it's in equilibrium. to some of the Y components, right? Which basically tells me that the force I'm exerting has to be equal to the normal force, the weight has to be equal to the frictional force, the frictional force is proportional to the normal force, right, when we're looking for the minimum force to hold that against the wall. This is going to be static friction, right? It's not moving. And the maximum static friction is mu Sn, right? So typically, we represent that by the maximum value. So most of the time when we use it, I leave max off, all right? Less writing. But the point here is, all right, there's a frictional force. The more normal force I push, the harder, the bigger the frictional force. But I just want the frictional force to equal the weight. So I already know that F sub S is equal to W. I don't have to compute F sub S is equal to mu Sn. But once I know that Fs is equal to Mg, that's W, right? Then Mg must be equal to this. I can solve for the normal force that's necessary, and that normal force is the finger force. You do not always need to use mu when you're talking about friction. As we should know for the quiz that we just took. Okay. Other examples. There's all sorts of pictures with pulleys and those types of things, right? What else do you do with ropes? We have pulleys. So let's say I have two massless pulleys sitting here. One is supported up at the top by a support to the ceiling or whatever. I've got a rope that's strung over this pulley, wrapped around here, and it's attached again at the top. And then I put a mass on it. And the idea is, what happens if I want to pull on this, or I basically just hold it, right? I could pull on it so that this moves at a constant velocity, or I could just hold it. It's an equilibrium situation. So I have a mass coming down here, and the question is, how much force do I need to exert at this end, okay, to hold that mass in place? So for example, if this is a 500 Newton mass, okay, so if the mass has a weight of 500 Newtons, then what forces are acting on this mass? Okay, obviously the weight, the tension in the cable that's connecting that mass to the first pulley. Okay, then we look at this pulley. What forces are acting on this pulley? Well, we're going to use massless pulleys, or at least negligible. There's going to be a downward tension. Notice that for the block, we have 500 Newtons down, so the tension pulling up must be equal to that if this is not accelerating. So the tension in the rope right here is going to be 500 Newtons. Now I've got 500 Newtons pulling down on the pulley. Is that the only force acting on the pulley? The first pulley. There's a tension in this rope. Notice that this pulley is being pulled up on both sides. So the tension in the top rope, right, there are two different ropes. There's the long rope, and then there's a shorter one. The tension in this rope is being applied twice to the pulley. So if the tension downward is 500 Newtons, the tension upward should be a total of 500, which means the tension in the long rope should be what? 250. So each piece of this rope contributes 250 Newtons, so a total of 500 is going up to compensate for the 500 pulling down. And now that rope, this one single rope, has a tension of 250 Newtons, which means in order to hold it at rest or to pull on it at a constant velocity, right, equilibrium solutions would give me, how much do I have to pull that 500 Newton weight up? 250 Newtons, half as much. All right, that's why one uses pulleys, so that you can lift heavy things without quite as much force. Okay, so you'll sweat just as much, as we'll find out in the next chapter. Okay, but pulling on this, we can do that. I could come up with more complicated pulley systems in which I could lift up that 500 Newton weight with, say, 100 Newtons of force. All right, so more complicated pulley systems, when you analyze them, will actually allow you to lift masses, okay, with a lot less force. All right, then you've seen, for example, in the sample quiz and the homework, things like these amusement park rides. All right, this is one of those rides that goes around and around, right? Amusement parks are great sources of physics, or fun physics, okay? But by now, you should be observing physics as you're walking around, right? We're learning to think a little bit like physicists, even if maybe it doesn't always show up on the quizzes. Right, but at least you're beginning to get the pieces together and find out that, you know, we do look at the world a little differently, and it's a matter of if we want to compute something, you know, how we can put those pieces together. So what I'm doing is just giving you an overview on some force problems here without solving anything with calculations. You want to be able to look at what you have in front of you and get some idea of what the physics is without actually computing anything to start. And once you have that, then you can sit down and look at the details. So here we have the amusement park ride. There's a person that's in the cylinder. They get it spinning up to so many radians per second, right? Some angular velocity that we'll learn about angular velocity later. And then all of a sudden the floor drops out. Right? And the question is, why don't the people fall out? So let's imagine this is spinning around. Let's imagine that there's no floor. What forces would possibly be acting on this person?
Base and triple.
Okay, well, there is going to be a net force in the direction pointing to the center, which involves the centripetal acceleration, right? But we need to look at the net force here to talk about any centripetal force. So we have the weight of the person.
And the normal force.
We have a normal force because the wall is pushing on the person.
There's frictional.
And there must be something that's
frictional.
Holding this person from sliding down. There's the frictional force. So we assume it's static friction, right? Because they're not moving. In principle, this picture looks very similar to the one that we have back here. Except instead of having a finger holding that person against the wall, okay? So you might see something like that in Monty Python. Okay, a big finger coming down. Have any of you seen Monty Python? Okay, many years ago. Anyway, so we need a frictional force, we've got the weight. So what do we have? The frictional force is equal to the weight. Very similar to this. Okay, but how can I deal with a normal force if I don't have a finger force here? Well, basically what we have is this thing is spinning around, so the net force in the horizontal direction is a force that's pointing to the center. If I look straight down, this is a mass, right? That body is going around in a circle, so that net force is equal to mv squared over r. So the net force in our case is the normal force. I've got the normal force. Fs is mu Sn, all right? So you can put all these pieces together and find out, for example, how fast that person needs to be going around so that they don't slip out, okay? This also depends upon the mu S between the clothes and the actual wall. So you have to be a little careful because people wear different kinds of things when they're on these, right? So you've got to be careful on your actual implementation of this. But there's a nice, simple amusement park ride. You can think of other types of problems. There's all sorts of fun problems that I could talk about, but we're getting to the point where we need to move on. This last problem is actually a problem from the next chapter, okay, done in the textbook. What you have here is a ski slope, right? You've got a skier sliding down the slope. There is a kinetic friction between the skis and the snow, and so there's a frictional force, Fk, acting on this person. That person is going downhill, just coasting. Of course, there is a frictional force, and the distance is given, 57 meters from this point to that point. V0 was given. wrote it down, I get six, 3.6. Meters per second. Question is, how fast is the skier going down here, taking into account friction? Okay. And it's the question, well, looks like an inclined plane problem, doesn't it? Right? We could figure out what the acceleration is, because I know that without friction, we know that the acceleration down the hill is what? If there were no friction, what's the acceleration?
A is just negative G sine.
Right. Well, negative, I'll just write magnitude G sine theta, right? There's a pretty important equation. We did a lab on it. Right? That's the downward acceleration. So therefore, the downward force is the mass times this, right? So it's just mg sine theta downward, frictional force upward. So I can do the total force in that direction, find out what its new acceleration is because of friction, and use kinematics. But we're not going to quite do it that way in the next chapter. We're going to find out there's some other methods that we can use. But for the most part, we can do this, right? If you know A equals G sine theta, then you would know, right? In fact, you could figure out, for example, if the person is on the incline and they're just sitting there because of the frictional force of the snow, right? Somebody needs to give them a shove before them to start moving. Let's say they were sitting here and it was static friction. Then we know the frictional force needed to support it is just going to be mg sine theta, okay? That should, some of your minds bring back some problem. I won't say more about that until tomorrow. All right, so one can look at all these different situations. We see forces all over, but there are a lot of problems we can solve without actually breaking forces up into components and doing quite as much work as we have been doing. But we will need some other concepts to start doing some problems that involve scalar manipulation more than vector manipulation. And this leads us to the chapter on work and energy. So chapter 6 will introduce the concept of work. We'll introduce energy, which everybody heard about the first day of the class, right? Physics is the study of blah, 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 energy, blah, blah. Okay? So we're going to introduce energy as one of our other key concepts in the course. Before I introduce energy, I have to introduce the notion of work. And there's a colloquial definition of work, okay, and there's a physics definition of work. And you have some feeling about when you've done a certain amount of work. Okay, that's not quite the same as the physics definition. You don't have to sweat necessarily, or you can sweat, not do any work. Okay. So, the idea is the following. I have an object. I will apply a constant force. So we're going to look at work by a constant force. Let's say I have a force. I apply a force to an object, right? Net force. What's this object going to do?
Accelerate.
So that means it could have some velocity at this point. It'll get displaced. Alright, I'm still applying this force to this object. And let's say this has been displaced from an initial position to some final position of interest. And now instead of using x like we've been using, the text introduces the letter s. Okay, for the displacement of this box. Okay, so I have a particular force that's constant. In my situation here, it is horizontal or at least parallel to the displacement. We are going to define the work that's done by this force using the capital letter W for work. It's a fairly obvious letter. And this work is just going to be the force times the distance. we define the work basically as force times the distance. Basically, the force times the distance through which that force was being exerted on the box, and that box was moving. Okay, so this could be our usual refrigerator. You could be applying a force to that refrigerator, pushing it. Constant force, you don't just shove it and walk it, stand there. You have to keep pushing. Okay? With a constant force in the same direction, right? Over a particular distance, right? So we have this displacement. All right. Work has units. Okay? Force is in what units? Newtons. Displacement is in what units?
Meters.
So we have newtons times meters. One newton meter is given a name, and it's called a joule. Okay. Named after the person again. Okay, we'll talk a little more about the joule later in this session. Okay, so that's the standard unit of work, a joule. Okay. All right, let's see. Well, that's not the only way a constant force could be applied. This is a very special case. What I could do is apply forces at angles. So think of the situation with the wagon that we had a few days ago, right? You pull on the handle of the wagon. The force you're exerting is not forward, but it's at an angle. So a more general picture would be the following. Here's my mass. I apply a constant force as the mass displaces. Then the mass will displace, so the displacement vector S is my force. All right, I draw a displacement vector from the initial position to the final position. All right, S is pointing in this direction. F is at some angle to S, which is not zero. Over here, F and S are parallel. All right, the angle between them is zero. Over here, this is a little more general. The angle between F and S, we'll call that theta, of course. And the work that's done is not going to be the magnitude of F times S, but it's going to be the horizontal component of F. So the part that is the component that's parallel to S is the component that we're going to use the work. So in general, the work now is not going to be F times S, but the horizontal component. What is the horizontal component of this F? F? Cosine of the angle, right. So there's a horizontal component, or the component that's in the same direction as S times S. So let's say I have 150 newton force. And we have a 35 degree angle. And we have a displacement of 20 meters. All right, so we apply 150 newtons. Okay. By, like we did before, pretending this, think of this as a wagon, right? We can pull on it. Okay? We go forward 20 meters, always exerting 150 newtons at a 35 degree angle as I pull this wagon. Okay? So the question is, what's the work? Well, the work is very simply, I'd rather write Fs cosine theta. So force times the displacement times cosine of the angle between them.
F is 150. Newtons. S is 20 meters. Cosine of 35 degrees. So we take 150 times 20 is what? 3,000? We take cosine of 35 degrees. What do we get? $2,457 or about, say, 2,500 joules. All right, the 2-6-6. Once again, make sure your force is in newtons and your displacement is in meters in order to write down joules. There are other types of energy units besides the newton meter. Okay, writing force in this case, what one could do is look at other energy units such as in the CGS system. In the CGS system, the force is in something called dynes. And then I have dynes times centimeters, and what I would end up with are units of work, which are called ergs. So one can see all sorts of different types of units in other systems. Most of the time we've been dealing with the MKS or the SI systems. Okay, so now I know that if I apply a constant force to an object, this object could possibly move. Now, another situation is, what if you've got a refrigerator coming at me this way, okay, and I'm applying a force to it, but I am not having very much luck in getting it to go the other way. The question is, am I doing work? Am I applying a force as the object's going through a distance? Yes. Am I applying a force that's going to result in any work? Well, so here's an example. I have an object which has some velocity in that direction. It moves from one point to another, S. But while it's moving, I am exerting a force on it in that direction. Well, what's going to happen to this? If that's the only force being exerted, right, it's going to be slowing down, but it's still going, okay, in possibly an undesirable direction. So let's ask, what would the work be in this case? Work is equal to the force times the displacement times the cosine of the angle between the two. Okay. So let's say I had some numbers. I don't know. Let's go with 150 newtons. That seemed to work all right before. Let's say this is displaced, I don't know, 3 meters. Question is, how much work was done by force on the body? What is F? 150. What's S? 3. What's the angle between F and S? See, S is going that way. F is going that way. The angle is 180. 180 degree difference between them, right? Aren't they in opposite directions? So, computing this, what do we get? Negative 450 what? Okay, one of the reasons for doing this is to indicate that work can be negative. Okay, but the other good thing is that work is a scalar. All right? No place here. Do you see an arrow on my W? Okay, it's a scalar quantity. We do not have components of work. Okay. There is no direction to work. Let's say my refrigerator is going that way and I'm pushing down. I'm pressing down as it's going that way, right? Somehow. How much work am I doing? What happens if I have an object? Again, it's being displaced. In the horizontal direction. And I have a downward force, a constant downward force, acting on this body the whole time. Give me an example of a constant downward force that could be acting on this body. Gravity. We could be interested in what work is gravity doing. Well, gravity is not animate, right? But gravity does work on objects. We'll need to know that for tomorrow because we're going to talk a little more about the work that gravity does. Okay, what's the angle between F and S? 90. What's the cosine of 90?
0.
0.
Here we got 1, we got 0.
0.
0. Cosine of 0, cosine of 90 is 0. So therefore, how much work is done in this case? 0. 0 joules of work. No matter how hard I push, how hard gravity pulls, right, the object's displacing this way, no work is done. Whereas the object would be in this place vertically, that's a different story. So it's possible also that there could be zero work being done. You could be pushing as much as possible, right? If the angle is 90 degrees, there's no work. If the object's not moving, if I keep pushing on this counter, and it's not going anywhere, there's no displacement. All right? Another example of no work. Okay, what we can do now is relate the work being done to the motion of the object. And so we have something that's called the work energy theorem. I'm going to derive now, so I can make use of that. Again, for the simple case, let's just look at the idea that I'm applying a constant force to an object, that object being displaced from one position to another. Since that's the only force, or the net force acting on the object, this object has some initial velocity here, a final velocity there. So he knows since I have a net force. By Newton's second law, there's an acceleration. All right, so we can tie some of these things together. So here's my object. At two different locations. Let's say that this has an initial velocity v. At the second location, it's got a final velocity. We have our force, so we have a constant force acting on this body. We have a constant force acting on that body. That body is being displaced, and its displacement, as we've been indicating in this chapter, is S. Since S is in the horizontal direction, I could actually just write down its magnitude as x, right? So the displacement from here to here we know is x, since it's in the x direction. And let me just use x for the time being. All right, let's ask what we can say about the work that's being done. The work being done by this force is what? Well, it's force times the displacement. All right, this is the special case, the simple case, right? So I don't right? We can get the simple case from this case easily by putting a 0 in for the cosine, and cosine of 0 is 1. So that gives me f out, right? They agree for theta equals 0, right? Theta equals 0 is one needs to force, and that's in the same direction. Okay, f. What we learned in chapter 4 was that the force is the mass times the acceleration, right? This body is accelerating. So let me put in mass times acceleration. So W is equal to ma times x. Of course, it's a constant force, that means our acceleration is a constant, right? So this is just simple kinematics with constant acceleration. We can go back to chapter 2. And in chapter 2, if you recall, there was a combination of a times x in one of our equations. Do we recall that? Yes, some of us recall that. So v squared is v0 squared plus 2ax. See, there's an ax. What I'm going to do is eliminate that product from both of these equations. Solve this for ax. And find out that I can get an expression that just involves the velocities. All right, so let's do that. Solve this for the ax. I get 2ax is v squared minus v0 squared. Just subtract v0 squared from both sides. And what? Divide by 2. So ax is equal to 1 half v squared minus v0 squared. So ax I can write in terms of velocities, and that's what I'm going to do now. Take the work, and instead of writing it in terms of position, right, or displacement in this case, right, I can write it in terms of the velocities, right, what I have initially versus and what I have finally. So substitute, you get W is equal to max, so W is equal to what? Just take that and multiply it by this seemingly uglier expression. So let's see, that's 1 half m v squared minus v0 squared. So there I have an expression for the amount of work that's done, not in terms of the displacement, but now in terms of velocities. In fact, we can do it a little bit better. Let me multiply this out. Take 1 half m, distribute it through, I get 1 half m v squared minus 1 half m v sub 0 squared. Okay. Like I said, doesn't this looks regular than what we started with, doesn't it? But maybe we're given different things. Very often, we are not given the force, right? When we did kinematics problems earlier in chapter 2, we talked about acceleration, but we did not have a force because we didn't know what a force was at the time. So here, I could get the work either using the force and the displacement, or I could do the work, get the work if I know the mass and I know the final velocity and the initial velocity. Actually, notice that this quantity here, in both cases, looks very much the same, doesn't it? This one and that one only differ by the fact that this second one is evaluated at the initial point, and this is evaluated at the final. Now, what happens whenever I say final minus initial? What do I do? Delta. I throw delta in, don't I? So what I could do is express W as delta something. So that something we're going to designate with the KE, and call that 1 half mv squared. This is the kinetic energy. So this expression that we see here, I am going to refer to now as the kinetic energy of a body. Kinetic, as we may have gotten some sense earlier, like with kinetic friction, has to do with motion. Right? This is the energy of motion. My body is not moving. What's the kinetic energy?
Zero.
All right, so if it's moving, it depends on its velocity. Of course, it depends on how big it is, too, right? Bigger objects moving at a certain speed are going to have more energy than smaller objects moving at the same speed, right? So if I increase the mass, right, that's just more kinetic energy. So this is the energy of motion. If I come back to my work equation, we can express my result very simply as the amount of work done to get this object going from V0 to V is the change in kinetic energy. All right, this just says final kinetic energy minus initial kinetic energy. So now I've expressed the relationship between work and something called kinetic energy. It turns out that this also has a name. This is the work energy theorem. Let's see. I have the difference of two things is going to be joules. What do you think these must have units of?
Joules.
All right. Kinetic energy has units of joules. Can we convince ourselves of that? Let's see. Not often we sit down and play around with the units, so let's play with the units. Kinetic energy has a mass. Do you agree? So we have a mass as units of kilograms. Units of velocity are meters per second. So we square that. So I have a meter squared per second squared. If I rewrite this unit-wise, what do I have? Let's see, I could write this as kilogram meter per second squared times meter. Just split up those 2 meters. Meters per second squared is a unit of acceleration. Mass times acceleration is a newton. So this looks like a newton. Newton times meter is a joule. And so, yes, kinetic energy does have units that are consistent with joules. All right, so we've derived the work energy theorem. Sometimes I would get to do problems in which we employ the work energy theorem to do the problem. Okay, and you're actually required to do that. So let's see. What kind of problems are we going to do? Let a force act on a 100 kilogram mass. It's going to change it from going at 6 meters per second to something faster. Okay, and we see that it gets moved over 5 meters. Question is, what's the force? Or the magnitude of the force? You'll see all kinds of problems like this, where the force could be, for example, the amount of force necessary to be exerted on an arrow as the arrow is being pushed by a bow through a certain distance before it, for it to go from rest to its final speed before takeoff. Okay? There are all sorts of examples you'll see similar to that. All right? Question here is, what's the force? Okay, we could go back to chapter 2 and just do some kinematics, get the acceleration. Once I know the acceleration, use F equals ma. Okay, but the work energy theorem is also another equivalent way to do this. So we're going to use the work energy theorem. We start off writing down the work is the change in the kinetic energy. The work side is the force times distance side. This part, you use the definition of work. This is not a definition of work. This is a relationship between the definition of work that we started with and the change in kinetic energy that has something to do with the resulting motion. Okay? So the work is the force times the distance that this object's been pushed. And the kinetic energy is just 1/2 mv squared. We look at the final kinetic energy minus the initial kinetic energy. Do we know the mass? Yes. Do we know the final velocity? Yes. Do we know the initial velocity? Yes. See, we're looking for the force. Do we know what is the displacement is? Yes. So we know everything but F. So that's pretty much it, as far as the application, other than plugging numbers in. So let's see, what is this? X is 5. So I've got 5F is equal to 1/2 of 100. V squared is 6 squared. Let's see, what's my final? Actually, it's 10, sorry. 10 squared minus 1/2 times 100 times 6. Other ways to compute this, you could have just factored out the 1/2 m and left the v squared minus v zero squared, just like in this form. It would have been a little bit less multiplications. Okay, whatever you're happy with. So what is this? 50 times 100 minus 50 times 36. 50 times 64. What is that? 3,200? 3,200. So 3,200 is 5F. Divide that by 5. 5 in the 3,200 is? 640. 640 what? All right, hopefully you remember to put your units in on the quiz. Okay. So again, I want to stress, using this work energy theorem, the work is usually gotten by a force times distance type definition. The change in kinetic energy, we just have to know what the kinetic energy is, and we can write down the change. There are other kinds of problems that can be done. This brings us back to the problem that was right here that I didn't mean to erase. Okay, but we always redraw it. Remember, I had a skier going downhill. Okay? So let's look at that example. This one's actually in the textbook. So, what do we have? We have a 25 degree slope. And then we have some kind of a skier. Okay, a skier is going downhill at some initial velocity of 3.6
meters per second. The skier gets down here somewhere, and we would like to know what the velocity is going down there. The displacement is 57 meters. So whatever point we're interested in, starting from here. Okay, now this is a little different than the problem we just did. The problem we did here, we knew what the final velocity was. And we knew we had to find something out about the forces. And this problem, we know something about the forces. As you may recall, we had a kinetic frictional force that was given. That frictional force was 70 newtons worth of force. Remember, the skier is going downhill. Kinetic friction is which direction? Uphill. We have a kinetic friction going in this direction. And, of course, there are other forces acting on this body. Recall, if I have a mass sitting on an incline, all right, we have weight, we've got a normal force, all right, but if I'm just interested in the acceleration, net force, and the direction along the displacement, remember the displacement here, S, is now going downhill. It's not horizontal like our other ones. So the displacement's going in this direction, I'm really just interested in the force in that direction to compute the work, right? Because the force is going to be the component that's parallel to S times S. So the force in this direction, what forces are in this direction? Well, we have the frictional force and we have a component of the weight. So the net force acting on this body in this direction is going to be, let's see. Well, I'm going to use downhill as positive. So I'm going to have mg sine theta is the component of the weight. We've seen this several times, right? This is the force downhill. We have a force uphill minus fk. Notice fk is given as 70 newtons, so I don't have to find the normal force. I don't need mu zero, I mean, use of k or anything. All right, we already know what this force is. Okay, that's what the net force is. We can compute this. Let's see, m times g, what is mass? Did I give you the mass? No, I didn't give you the mass. This time anyway, did I even write it down? Mass is, oh, the weight was given. Right. So the weight was given at 170. So mg was given. We know mg. That's 170 times the sine of the angle, which is 25, minus 70. So this is the force along the incline. What is that number? What? 1.85. Well, we'll see if that's right. 1.85. That's right? Newtons. So there is a net force, right? I've picked downward as positive in this, just like we had in the lab. So there is a net force downhill. This is, okay, the amount of work being done on this person. I mean, this is the amount of force on the person. If I want to know how much work is done, is it this person goes through 50 centimeters, 57 meters. I have to compute what? Work is the force times the displacement. All right? Force in that direction.
I know what I did. I didn't write the mass down.
made up of. That's a big first, actually. These are not the, that's not the mass of the, that's not the weight of the person, I mean. Actually, no, it's the weight. That's a small, yeah, too small of a person. All right, so the number I looked up was wrong, but that's all right. We'll just go with that one. So instead of a sphere, we'll just say it's a sled with no person in it or something. That's a pretty lightweight person. So how much work is being done by the force, the net force here? It's going to just be 1.85 newtons times 57. What do you get? 105.5, 106. Okay, we can even round that up to 110. All right, if this were two sig figs, we would make that 110 joules. Some people get a little upset when they look in the back of the textbook, and they get 106, and the book is 110. All right, just remember the book rounds. Okay. All right, but that's the basic idea. If the mass of this, or the weight of this, is 170 newtons, which it wasn't, but that's okay. You can look at a more realistic sphere from the problem in the text. All right, what is... I have not done yet. We're not done. We still have a... Okay. We want to find the final velocity. What this has done is computed the left side of the work energy theorem. So now we go to the right side of the work energy theorem and we write this out. So we have the work is the change in the kinetic energy, which is 106 joules. Well, we can find the mass. 1/2 mv squared minus 1/2 mv sub zero squared. So for this made-up problem, the question is, if the weight were 170 newtons, so whatever is sliding downhill, what would the mass be? Mass is the weight divided by little g. Divide 170 by 9.8.
17.
What? 17.3. Mass is. So we do have mass. So we can go in here and plug that in. That's 1/2 of 17.3 b squared minus 1/2 of 17.3. What was b zero? 3.6. So the idea, again, is we get the work from force times distance, and the change in kinetic energy relates to the motion. If I am given an initial velocity, I can solve that for the final velocity, right? There's no point in writing this out so you can see. Yes, I can get V. I can find out its final velocity. Okay, so solve for V. Details aren't that important at this point. The idea is how do you set that up? You compute the work one way by the definition, but we can relate it to the change in kinetic energy. All right, we're going to do more energy stuff tomorrow. So, see you tomorrow.